We're back. New Boy, week. New wait. Hat.
Psh, new shirt. New shit. And welcome back to another episode of Black Law and Legalize, where we specialize in telling the truth as we know it. I am one of your hosts. My name's Justine. And you can follow me on Twitter at ITellLegalize. You can follow the show across all social media platforms at Black Law Podcast. Please don't follow my friend here. He has a twitchy trigger finger, and he is liable to shoot you. Y'all saw that 7-part series on how to unload and load a gun?
Man,
wait, look, how you turn that into 7 parts, though?
Nah, it wasn't just unloading. It was how to handle a firearm, how to hold one, how to check and see if it's loaded, how to lock the slide back.
Did you point it at yourself at any point?
Actually, I did. To show people what not to do. I did to show people what not to do. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Dan. You can keep up with me on Twitter at I am Dan on Drugs. And this is a brand new week, brand new show, new shirt, new hat. I mean, and showed up wearing the same thing.
You have to You have to point it out. Anyway.
So what we're going to talk about here, ladies and gentlemen, is qualified immunity.
You know, in keeping with current events, what's going on? I know a lot of people, you're hearing that phrase bandied about. You know, you hear qualified immunity. And I'm sure people want to understand what it means and what it has to do with police officers.
Let me take a stab because I don't know the exact definition, but just gathering things that I've heard.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say qualified immunity is basically if you commit a crime in the act of doing your job as a police officer, in this case, you have immunity against that crime.
Hmm.
Okay, that's all I got.
All right, so you are kind of right, kind of wrong. I mean, I said but so qualified immunity is this legal construct wherein police officers are not held accountable civilly for actions that they've taken under the color of the law.
When are they ever held accountable, period?
Well, see, it seems like the law had to find a way to make police officers comfortable going about their day, you know, causing civil unrest and what's not. But basically, that is what it is.
What, is that President Clinton?
This is the Democratic National Convention, August 2000. Dude, where?
That's Bill Clinton, huh?
Yes, but where the shit is that even coming from?
Your phone.
Yeah, but I don't have that shit on my phone.
Well, obviously you do.
Man.
Maybe you said a keyword. They tracking you with qualified immunity. Man. Bill Clinton starts speaking like, nah, but they impeached me, son.
Man, look, let me tell you, that shit right there is scary. Siri is always listening.
I turn Siri off.
I'm going to have to do that because that shit was ridiculous. You know, the thing started playing. I was like,
I thought that was your ringtone. I'm going to say you got an odd taste in ringtone.
Like, who is playing? But anyway, getting back to it, as I said, it's a legal construct. And what it is designed to do is give police officers some feeling of safety when they are going about policing and they've done something that may seem illegal or unjust to the common man. So what qualified immunity does, as I said earlier, is make it is what's called an affirmative offense.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm sorry, affirmative defense. And the police officer would have to say or actually put that defense forward, and that basically stops if the judge finds that qualified immunity applies. It stops everything. Like, you will not have your day in court if the judge finds that qualified immunity actually applies. But having said that, what the court does is look at the circumstances most favorable to the plaintiff. So they look at everything that is pled by the plaintiff in light of what's in the best interest of the plaintiff, because this defense would basically take away your right to trial. As far as the plaintiffs are concerned, they do that. But qualified immunity is crazy because of the way the law has developed. It used to be somewhat subjective. Now there has been put in place an objective standard. And the way that objective reasonableness.
Well, let me explain subjective and objective to our listeners. So objective means that you know, it's funny how often you use words, you know what they mean, but
when it's time to articulate them.
So objective means you don't have a dog in this race. You can see all sides without any bias. Subjective is the opposite of that. So there we go.
Well,
thesaurus Dan.
Well, legally, objective means person on the outside of the situation using reasonableness. Would they have done the same thing that you did?
Reasonable man standard.
Pretty much.
Okay.
So subjective, person in your shoes, not looking out. It's inherent to the way you look at the situation. That's what subjective is. It's about how you see the situation, you know, emotions that you were feeling at the time, what was going through your head. That's subjective. It's about you. Objective is outside of you, just looking at the circumstances. What would someone else have done? Right?
Gotcha. So, okay, so what's the difference when it comes to the immunity?
All right, so as far as qualified immunity is concerned, the court says that there is an objective test that has to be met, and it's a two-pronged test. So what the court says is that one of two things. This is how you know whether or not qualified immunity applies. So one, was there a violation of constitutional rights? That's the first thing, right? So, secondly, has that right been clearly established? Now, one would think
your civil rights, I just kind of want to jump the gun a little bit. Your civil rights are clearly established, correct?
Maybe not. So, see, that's why I was about to delve further into this clearly established thing. Okay. You would think from the way that it sounds that if you have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, if you have the right to not be unreasonably searched and seized, that if someone violates that right, that is a clearly established right, right? Because it's in the Constitution.
Even though under President Trump, the Constitution is about as valuable as toilet paper.
So let me tell you what.
Wait, toilet paper is actually in these times more valuable than our Constitution.
Right. So this is what clearly established for the purpose of qualified immunity means. Says that the contours. Now, this is legal definition. So it's pretty highbrow. The contours of the right must be sufficiently clear that a reasonable official would understand that what he is doing violates that right. So, as I said, should be cut and dried. If you unreasonably search and seize me, you have violated a clearly established right, right?
Right.
Wrong. So,
wait, wrong as in?
That's not the way this operates.
Okay.
So, this is what is crazy about this whole thing. Like, when they say clearly established, they mean the way the law has actually devolved or evolved, they mean clearly established in jurisprudence, meaning
case law.
Correct. So if you are And it's all fact-based. So if you have a scenario that no one else in jurisprudence has ever had, you are basically screwed.
So your case is going to set the precedent.
Correct.
Or whatever.
So if you are the first person to litigate that particular set of facts, as I said, you are pretty much done. There's this guy. It was funny.
What's crazy too is because we are talking about qualified immunity in regards to policing and mm-hmm. current events with all these black men being killed.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like that.
That's never happened before.
Right. Exactly.
Right. But wait, I'm a tell you about a case that is quite like Rashard Brooks.
Okay.
And so like when I saw this particular case, because I did some research and I saw this case and I was like, but going back to what I said about established in case law. So there is this judge that sits on the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. And he said the way that the law has evolved causes a catch-22, particular for people who have had their civil rights violated. The way the law works now, and it's as a result of this case known as Pearson. So what the Pearson case establishes is that basically if there is no precedent, that equals no clearly established law, which equals no liability. So it's as I said, if you are the very first person to go before the court with this particular scenario,
all right,
you screwed.
Let me throw layman Dan out here, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if I walk up to somebody with a 3-inch knife, stab them in their carotid artery, right? Kill them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we have cases where people have been killed by being stabbed in their carotid arteries with 4-inch knives, 5-inch knives, with a broken glass, but never a 3-inch knife.
No, because similar facts. So, for instance, all right, so what I was talking about, Rashard Brooks. Let's do this. So let's go to this. All right. So, that was a case. It was called, or it is called, Ellis versus Winalda. All right?
State of Oklahoma.
Can't remember.
Let's go with that because it sounds right.
All right. So, Ellis was a burglary suspect, right?
Okay.
So, at the time, Ellis was shot in the back.
Leaving a house.
By this officer. He was running away, right? So, he was shot in the back. So, remember when I said earlier about you have to view the facts in the light most favorable to the plaintiff?
Right.
All right.
So in this case, the plaintiff would be
Ellis.
Okay.
Right, because he was saying that Winalda violated his civil rights
because
he shot him in the back.
Okay.
All right. So judge looks at this, light most favorable to plaintiff, being the fleeing burglary suspect.
Gotcha.
Denies the qualified immunity defense because, as they say, considering the facts in the light most favorable to Ellis, the jury could find that he did not pose an immediate threat of serious bodily harm.
Right. And let me throw that in here too, just because of the whole gun series, 7-part gun series. Never shoot anybody in their back, because if you're facing someone's back, they're not a threat to you. They are not. And especially if they're running away, mm-hmm. if they're walking away, mm-hmm. just like the cop in South Carolina who killed the black man who owed child support,
mm-hmm.
pulled him over. He owed child support. He got out and ran. Cop shot him in his back.
Mm-hmm.
No one running away from you is a threat.
Okay. So
just wanted
Yep. And I believe we spoke on an earlier show,
probably the self-defense show,
about this situation. All right, so as I said, his qualified immunity defense was denied because jury could find that he did not pose a threat of serious bodily harm. He was running away.
Right.
Right. Once you get to trial, then the burden shifts. Burden shifts to plaintiff to prove.
That
right?
still should be easy enough.
In your head, you would think, right? Okay, so that's why I said this is a Rashard Brooks scenario, this Ellis case. So this is what happened. So Ellis, as he was running away, turns around and throws a bag at the officer, right?
What was in this bag? Do we know?
Don't know. All right. So.
Did it explode?
Officer is telling him to stop. Mm-hmm. He turns around, throws a bag. So here's what the question becomes. Could a reasonable officer believe that Ellis posed an immediate threat at that time?
Reasonable officer? No. But I would say every officer, yes. They would say that was, let's just be honest.
So court thought exactly as you're saying. Mm-hmm. So this is what the court said. If Winalda shot Ellis while he was throwing the bag, that would have been permissible as the actions of a reasonable officer facing a dangerous felon. Expert witnesses may also testify that once an officer makes a decision to pull the trigger, it takes about 0.30 seconds to stop. And that within that time, Ellis could have already turned away. So basically, at the point where he threw the bag, he was a threat. You pull the trigger, he turns back, the bullet catches you in the back because that split second is all it took for
him to turn around.
Right.
That is completely bullshit because, like, and I'm sure any expert could even verify this, and I'm no expert, but this is me thinking, right? Mm-hmm. If I'm aiming a gun at you, right, and I pull the trigger, you have 0.3 seconds to turn around. I'm sure you've heard a gun fired before, right? Mm-hmm. To know that that gun is pointed at you and you hear the gun fire, you will not be able to move because just for a split second, you're going to flinch and tense up. Mm-hmm. And once you realize you're not hit, or even if you are hit, then you'll turn around. But there's no fucking, that's impossible to shoot a gun at somebody and you turn around after I pull the trigger, you hear the sound, you turn around and I catch you in the back. That's bullshit.
In that case,
they need Mythbusters out that bitch because that's bullshit.
In that case, officer got away with it.
I'm sure he did.
Court jury found that a reasonable officer. So here's the other thing about qualified immunity and the way that the law has evolved. Courts have said that reasonable mistakes can be made. So
what's a reasonable mistake?
All right, so
I don't think loss of life is a reasonable mistake.
Wait, mistakes of law and mistakes of fact. So try this scenario on for size. And we've had many of these happen in our community where brothers have gone down for situations quite like this. So this case actually went to Supreme Court. Eric Gardner's case. You remember? Mm-hmm. His situation?
Yep.
All right. So
let me just remind the people, they used an illegal chokehold to kill Eric Gardner.
All right. So this is what the court said in this particular case. That the officer, remember when I said reasonable mistakes of the law? Mm-hmm. All right. So in this particular case, the officer relied on a state statute that authorized all necessary force to stop a fleeing felon. All necessary force.
That means deadly force.
Is what the state law read. And so the Supreme Court, this thing went all the way to Supreme Court. Supreme Court declared that state statute unconstitutional.
But
only in so much as it authorized deadly force to stop any fleeing felon. But the officer reasonably relied on it at the time that he shot the person. Therefore, qualified it was a mistaken law.
So that officer, he was like, man, I know that I can shoot him and use deadly force by shooting him in the back because he's fleeing because of an old ass fucking state law that I don't know to be unconstitutional.
Correct.
Bullshit.
So that is what...
See, and that's where the law, and that is why we're so distrustful of the law. And that's also why... Hang on. So, yeah. Anyway, as I was saying, that is why we're so distrustful of the law. And we're also distrustful, like, with everything that's going on now, how you fucking Nancy Pelosi and them with their Wakanda suits on
kneeling.
And mm-hmm. you hear people saying, we didn't ask you to do this. We're asking for policy. We're asking for legislation. Well, the devil's in the details. So mm-hmm. we get this legislation mm-hmm. that says you can't kill black people. Officers will be held accountable, both civilly and
criminally.
Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, we can get all the policy want. There's still going to be little fucking loopholes that they use. And that's somebody's job, is especially in these police unions. Mm-hmm. Their job is to know the loopholes. Mm-hmm. And I have no doubt that they pass this information along to officers.
Oh, of course they do. But think about this. You're saying that. Do you know how long it takes a case to get to the Supreme Court?
Yeah. Takes a case of this nature, we're probably looking at about 18 months longer. I know.
Absolutely. And then
with most police shooting cases, and this is me tracking them, mm-hmm. I've seen that it's taken about 1 year to even get to court.
Well, let's go with your number even then. So in this particular case, and this was a case in Tennessee, all right?
No surprise.
Officer used this force, right?
Mm-hmm.
Went all the way through the circuits up to the Supreme Court. Between the time that this happened the first time till the time it hit the Supreme Court, how many more people do you think were shot in the back and they used that law as...
In that state, I'm going to say 17.
Probably more than that. I don't have the statistics on it, but I just said that so that we can realize that, you know, overturning these things take time.
Right.
And while we are trying to get these laws overturned, more it's things like happening. These happen.
Right. And like, and this is the shit I can't wrap my mind around. I very seldom get angry. I find a lot of shit that I probably shouldn't find funny, laughable.
Mm-hmm.
And even some of the stuff that's going on today, like I find it laughable. Now, not in a comedic way or humorous way, but that we're out here peacefully protesting police brutality.
And
the police are beating the fuck out of peaceful protesters, throwing fucking tantrums, and like they're threatening to not do their jobs.
They're not doing their jobs. How many police on the Atlanta police force?
They're doing a sick out. And what I want to share too is this is from P, who was a public mm-hmm, servant.
Mm-hmm.
He was firefighter EMT. There's only, so a sick out is considered a strike.
Mm-hmm.
There's only 11 states where public servants are allowed to strike. Georgia is not one of them. So I'm going to just read this verbatim. So if there's any typos, P, you about to sound stupid, bro. So because of our status as essential public employees, we aren't allowed to collectively bargain, which means we have no union rights. Every state doesn't ban it, but it's pretty much not done anywhere. Only 11 states allow public employees to strike, but police and firefighters are generally not allowed anywhere. It endangers public health, and the same goes for public transit workers, too, in many states. So, essentially, any public job that endangers public life, like the fire, police, EMS, transit, they cannot strike. Any public employee that doesn't like teachers, DMV, etc., that impacts economics, and they can strike. So that's just something.
But let's talk about that. I like that, because that actually helps me to segue into something. We talk about...
Oh, and the key word he used here too, with the one I skipped, is they should be charged with malfeasance or malingering.
Malfeasance in office?
It was either malingering or malfeasance, one or the other. But
So
they should be charged.
Let's talk about that. So he said that public servants like firefighters and police officers are not allowed to strike.
Right.
Right. So say they fire these people who are a part of this sick out.
Mm-hmm.
This is the reason why a lot of the times, because, you know, we're talking about, since we're talking about this, Derek Chauvin had all of these violations
18
in his record.
Or 19, 18 or 19.
He was never disciplined.
No, he was written up twice.
Okay, written up. Okay.
That was his discipline.
Right. You know, they wrote something in his file.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We acknowledge that you're an abusive prick. Woo. But he was never disciplined, like forced to do alternative training or leave without pay or anything like that. He was not dismissed from the police department. And the reason why a lot of this stuff does not happen is because, one, unions. Two, they're civil servants. So say the police chief would have fired him. That is not where it ends.
He'd have his job back in a year.
He would have to go before the Civil Service Review Board. And if they decide that he was fired without cause, they send him back to the job.
Yep.
But if they don't, they go, then, you know, you go through like a
arbitration,
a civilian review board.
Mm-hmm.
You go through the union. So eventually, we've seen it time and time again. These bad actors wind up back on that police force. And if not that one.
Another one.
Another one.
You like know, the cop who killed Tamir Rice. He was from another department where he was either fired or he was disciplined. Mm-hmm. And yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you see that. And this is why they feel that they can do these things with impunity. Because for the most part, they can. They're not being civilly or criminally prosecuted, and when they are, nothing ever comes of it. They're not losing their jobs, they're not losing their pension. Even if Derek Chauvin gets freaking convicted,
he still has a pension. Now, what's crazy too, this is a thought, I might have even asked you this, but I'm gonna ask again, right? So Derek Chauvin's wife was Asian, mm-hmm. Asian American.
Mm-hmm.
Once all this shit went down, now, I'm sorry, but I refuse to believe that you did not know who the fuck your husband was. I refuse to believe that.
Oh, she knew.
So she files for a divorce,
She's getting her name changed. She's stepping away as far as she can.
So with that being said, my thought is she doing this?
Protect because, the assets.
Yeah, exactly. So when a civil suit comes, if he loses a civil suit, he doesn't have shit because his wife, ex-wife, took it all. Do you think that's the case? Or do you think she really wanted a divorce because, oh my God, I can't believe Derek would do something like this.
Man, look how fast it happened, though. Like,
days.
He got arrested like a day later.
Yeah.
She filed divorce papers. So, I mean, something is rotten in Denmark as far as I'm concerned. Like, that's the very first thing. That's where my mind went. Asset mm-hmm. protection. And I'm like, what the hell does he have?
Well, now he'll have his pension. And correct. Also, I wanted to explain something. Now, this is way old, but I did want to explain this because when one of the other cops posted bail, his bail was $100K. And a lot of people this is why we're here, ladies and gentlemen. A lot of people who aren't familiar with our justice system, our jail system, they were screaming, how the hell could a cop afford on a $60K salary $100,000?
Union.
He didn't pay $100,000. Mm-hmm. He paid 10 to 12% of that.
13%, something like that.
And there was a fundraiser that was set up on GoFundMe for racist motherfuckers to donate to, and they far exceeded whatever their goal mm-hmm. was. So they had the money, and the money didn't come out of his pocket, but mm-hmm. we talked about it before on this show. The way bail works, you go to a bail bondsman, they put up the money, you pay them 10% or so of whatever the bond is. If whoever it is skips their court date, then you're on the hook for the rest.
Right. You lose whatever you put down, and then you get that person to get the rest.
Right.
And if you have a property bond, that's like you just screwed somebody.
You ain't got no house no more.
You just screwed somebody.
So the other thing, too, that's interesting about Chauvin is I just found this out today. One of the supervisors of the jail he's in collected all of the black COs in that jail, moved them to another floor, and pretty much told them, we don't want you interacting with them. We don't want you doing your job around
them.
But
you know
what? They're suing right now for discrimination because what they're saying is, you're pretty much telling me so the supervisor said, it's because of the nature of the case, and I don't want you to be triggered.
You think that I am so violent that I am going to F him up, basically.
I can't perform my job. I'm not a professional because I am black. And I'm like, holy shit, how stupid can you be? So now that jail supervisor, whoever it was, they're fired too. The qualified immunity is what's protecting a lot of these officers, right, which makes them feel like they can do whatever they want. These police unions are protecting officers.
The civil service, they're protecting the officers. Civilian review boards, they're protecting the officers. The officers are protecting themselves because, you know, the blue wall is a real thing. I mean, won't eat blue. And if they do, then it's a problem.
Now, let me ask you this here in closing, right?
But we can't close because I got one more thing to say. Okay. Remember I talked about exceptions and one was mistaken law and the other one was mistaken fact?
Right.
I do want to get to mistaken fact because it's fairly interesting that I can just say, oops, I thought.
Alternative facts, basically.
Well, this is the thing. And like I said, and this is another one that we've heard over and over again.
Before I forget.
Okay.
The blue wall, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you know how you'll have people say, yeah, we know all cops aren't bad cops. We know if all cops aren't bad cops and they're not stepping up, doesn't that
make all of them bad? That's the thing. Because in the George Floyd case, for the rookie cop who's only been on the job for 4 days to say, oh, I asked him if we should turn him over and he said he's all right. But you sat there and you continued to hold his legs down. I don't care if I'm 4 days on the job. I am going to do something, call something. Hell, from what I understand, you know, we're learning more. An off-duty EMT called 911. About the situation.
As did a dispatcher as well. Called
her supervisor. They knew that this situation was wrong. You knew it was wrong as well, but you chose because that blue wall, you know, I'm not going to turn on the brotherhood.
And it's funny the way the dispatcher said it too is, I don't want to snitch or nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Bitch, it's your fucking job.
Correct.
Whatever.
But you know how snitches get stitches? Yeah, same situation. I don't want to turn on this person because this person might have to have my back at some place down the line. And I want to make sure that he or she is going to cover me. And that's the crazy part. But to get back to
alternative facts,
we talked about reasonable mistakes of the law. And we had an example of that. Reasonable mistakes of the facts. And here's a good one, because like I said, our people have definitely bumped up on this one time and time again and lost their lives.
Mistaken identity.
No. So who comes to mind? Stephon Clark comes to mind in this scenario.
He had the cell phone in his grandma's backyard.
And what did the officer say?
That he thought it was a gun.
So reasonable mistakes of facts. An officer may make reasonable but mistaken beliefs about the facts, right? And this is out of a case in Shreveport. The officer mistook a silver object in the suspect's hand for a handgun. Turned out to be a cell phone. And officer was given qualified immunity because he mistook, and it was a reasonable mistake to make. Man lost his life, but reasonable mistake to make. Oh, well, see, like I said, Stephon Clark, he got hit how many times by how many police bullets? They thought he had a gun and it was his cell phone.
Right.
So once again, the law protects police officers. And, you know, in a way you can understand why, because you want them to be able to do their jobs and not second guess everything they do. But
I want you to second guess everything you do.
Well, the thing is, second guessing could cost you your life.
That's okay.
But because, of course, that's what you sign up for, to protect and to serve, and not just yourself. But at the point where you have this blanket construct that basically isolates you from responsibility, and we go back to the blue wall and seeing something and saying something. There's this woman, cannot remember her name. She was a police officer in New York. And this happened about 10 years ago. I was watching this on, I think it was the Today Show. And she was riding along with her partner. They stopped somebody. And she's a black woman. Officer that was her partner was a white male. Suspect was a black male. Officer was choking. White officer was choking this black man out.
Mm-hmm.
She pulled him off and stopped the whole thing. Called it in. She filed a complaint. Well, they turned it around on her that she did not follow protocol, that she
assaulted an officer.
Pretty much, she basically caused a situation where the officer's life was in danger. And so because of that, she got fired, pulled her pension. 10 years later, she had 5 kids she was raising on her own. She lost her job, lost her pension. She was a year away from actually having her pension locked.
Mm-hmm.
And because she was fired, she lost it. 10 years later, state of New York, well, city that she was in, state as well, they are now revisiting her case because of what happened with George Floyd.
Right.
And you know what she said? And I was like, you have to respect this woman. She said, yes, I understand. She sort of went Kaepernick on this thing. You have to believe in something to the point that you lose everything.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what she said. She said, because they asked her if she knew today what she knew then, she said she would do it all over again, because guess what? That man is alive today, right, because of what she did. And
see, now when it comes to black police officers, black police officers, I just want to point out to you that what and the case Ann just talked about. Or let's talk about the Middle Eastern cop in Minnesota who killed the white lady, right? Mm. Whenever y'all do some of the shit that these white cops get away with, they do not have your back. But believe y'all want to sit there and cover for them. They don't have your back. They will throw you under the bus. And then they'll do it under the guise of, see, we're holding our officers accountable. No, y'all holding y'all niggas accountable. That's
correct.
What it is. They don't have y'all backs.
And
y'all
like, how fast was
cover.
That? How fast was that man put in jail, tried? Well, he was arrested.
It was like less than 6 months.
Right. He was arrested, tried, and put in jail. And you know what's crazy? The DA for Minneapolis trotted that shit out. Like, look how swiftly we did this.
Exactly. We are holding our officers accountable, even though you didn't hold the officer that killed Philando Castile. You didn't hold these officers with George Floyd. Like, fuck out of here. So y'all want to sit here and cover for Massa, and Massa just going to lynch your ass when the time comes.
Right.
But yet, you know what I'm saying? Man, I just don't understand that shit.
Yeah, but she said she would do it again and again and again. And
as
now,
she should.
The state of New York is actually looking at, she spent her time wisely. For 10 years, she has been advocating for this law that would do exactly what we said. If you are found guilty of something like that, or if you're fired, you get your certification removed, and you will not, no pension, and you're not able to go to another police force.
Yeah, I agree with that. And you should be held liable civilly, which, I mean, I'm still waiting for the day we see that happen.
Keep waiting for that. So, keep waiting for it. That is very rare. Like I said, qualified immunity, it does a number. It really does.
It needs to go. Any kind of immunity before the fact of anything needs to go. Like, would you give a criminal defendant immunity before you know what you're going to charge them with, before they get arrested on some, what was that movie? The Minority Report.
Oh,
it's like, yeah. Yo, I know this dude's going to get commit a crime one day.
He about
so
to murder
let's just give
somebody.
Him immunity right now. Like, nah, man.
Yeah, well, that is, shit out. Like I said, you surprisingly, last tidbit, and then I'll shut up for now. Clarence Thomas. Look, you saying, psh.
Man, but that nigga, he always sits out.
But let me tell you, though, Clarence Thomas, actually, because you remember how I told you that this law has evolved into something that is not really what the framers thought about? Like, this qualified immunity has been in place since the 1900s. Mm-hmm. And Congress did this, but this was not something, this is not really the way that they saw it going. And Clarence Thomas said something in one of these cases that, and he was like, you know, this is not the way the Congress that instituted this law wanted it to work. Because what is happening more and more is the Supreme Court actually has allowed, remember I told you it was a two-pronged test?
Mm-hmm.
If you've had a constitutional right violated, and if it was, what did I say, reasonable? What's the second prong?
The fact.
Man, nah.
Oh, objective.
Oh, and was the right clearly established?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it used to be, first you figured out whether or not you had a constitutional right that was violated.
Right.
And then, was it clearly established? Well, they are skipping the constitutional violation situation and going directly to, was it clearly established? And once you do that, when you do that, you miss that whole step, it's easier to say qualified immunity. And you never get to the point, well, what were the rights violated, constitutional rights violated? So it's really getting out of control. And I have to say, big ups to the state of Colorado. Y'all go and look this up. The state of Colorado is right now, their legislators are going through this bill that would limit qualified immunity. And I mean, it's this whole big police reform bill that they're doing. It has a lot of good stuff in it. Y'all go and look that up. I mean, I think the governor signed it, if I'm not mistaken. But I could be wrong. It happens. Y'all go and look it up. And because I was reading it earlier, and I was like, right. Like, I agree with so much that's in this thing, but I don't think it goes far enough. I mean, honestly.
Get rid of that shit all
Can't
together.
Go far enough.
And I'll leave you all with this. Affirmative duty. A lot of public servants have affirmative duties to act, right? Even if you are not on the clock. For instance, firefighter EMT.
Mm-hmm.
If he were to see an accident and somebody was hurt, mm-hmm. he had an affirmative duty to act.
Uh-huh.
So he would have to pull over mm-hmm. and provide EMT medical care until the ambulance got there. If he did not, it would be called in a basically abandoning your duty, right?
Mm-hmm. Malfeasance in office.
So, yeah, malingering too and all that. One of the, I forget, was it a police chief or a police supervisor said that all of the people standing around mm-hmm. watching George Floyd filming it, they should have stepped in.
It was the police union dude who said that.
basically, they should have stepped in and stopped this officer from killing this man.
And show one of the defendant's lawyer said that as well.
So it is our job now to police the police as civilians. Can you imagine
how many people would have happened?
So let's go back to Eric Garner real quick. The guy who filmed it, his life became hell after everything, and all he did was film it.
Right.
So can you imagine going over there and jacking them up, putting Derek Chauvin in a chokehold?
Oh, baby. You know how many people would have been in jail or dead?
Everybody.
Because the cops would have, no doubt about it.
They would have Rodney King'd his ass.
Oh, no doubt about it.
And speaking of Rodney King, Netflix has the Black Lives Matter series, and I've been watching all of them. Mm. And I'm looking back at the Rodney King case now as an adult. Let's see, in 90, whatever, I was like a child. I was still in school.
And you know, all of them got off.
They did. They all got off. But there's a lot of things I didn't understand at the time that looking back now. So, first thing I tweeted about this while I was watching it is the change of venue. Mm-hmm. So, they said because of how publicized this case was.
They could not get an impartial
jury. Mm-hmm. So they moved it 30 miles away from Los Angeles. Come on now, 30 miles away. So you're not going to find an impartial jury in Los Angeles, but 30 miles away. Nobody's heard of this, even though it made national news and it's all everyone was talking about. So
no, they forum shopped. Believe me.
They moved it to Simi Valley. Simi Valley is a mostly law enforcement community, white suburb of Los Angeles.
Oh yeah, like I said, they forum shop. Believe me, they forum shop.
That shit was foul. So when you look at the jury makeup, you're looking at pretty much an all-white jury in a pro-law enforcement area.
Correct.
You had members of that community coming to the courthouse to hand deliver boxes of donuts, food, flowers for these police officers. Mm-hmm. And then these police officers are like, the one dude's defense was the main one, I forget his name, but the one who beat the fuck out of him the most was, you all should be happy that I beat him like this, because I was afraid that if this beating didn't work, I would have to kill him. So his defense for beating the man that badly was, I was doing this so I didn't have to kill him. Like, if you don't get the fuck out of here. So I look at the riots too. And I remember, again, seeing those as a kid, I'm like, yo, this is fucked up, man. Fuck that shit. Because what a lot of people forget, even me, Latasha Harlan, the 15-year-old black girl who was murdered by an Asian, I want to say Vietnamese, maybe Korean, Korean store owner, because the store owner thought she was trying to steal orange juice that she was at the counter trying to pay for.
Uh-huh.
So that happened like a few days before Rodney King. And I'm sitting here and I'm watching all the Korean store owners band together, arm themselves and stand out. And it was basically a fucking war zone. And I'm like, I'm sorry. Race and ethnicity aside, I don't feel bad for you, because one, fuck your store. You see what's going on. This whole city is burning. And you want to sit there and man the fort? Fuck your fucking candy and ice creams and sodas and cigarettes. Nigga, get the fuck out of there.
No, see, what people, and it's crazy, they don't have our perspective. They can't understand. You know, I mentioned on a previous show about the guy who was the white guy who was asking me what can we do? It's like, unless you walk a mile in my shoes, you will never know. And he even said this. He said, you know, I will not know what it feels like to send my children out to drive and fear that they won't come back if they get stopped. I will never know that. I said, you're right. You will never know that. And hopefully we get to a point where we will never know that. But unless this system changes, it will always be there. You know, black parents will always have to have the talk. And he made a comment about this officer, black police officer, that he knew. And he tells his son, he said they have a special clip that they use when he gets in the car, he has to clip his license and his registration to the clip that's on the visor so that if he gets pulled over, he never has to remove his hand from the steering wheel. If the officer says license and registration, he says, "Officer, it's pinned to the visor above my head." He said he coaches his son about what to say and what to do. And he says, whatever you do, never take your hands from the wheel.
I'm sorry, but that's impossible. And it's not impossible. It's impractical because I was taught the same thing growing up. Keep your hands on the steering wheel and like even turn the overhead lights on, turn the car off. What you want to do is make yourself seem
less threatening.
But no one drives and plans on or expects to get pulled over. And it's like, but no matter what you do,
the very fact that you even have to do that, the very fact that as a white person, you get pulled over.
You can cuss the cop out. Yeah.
What's up? You know, you want me to step out? You can make as many gestures as you want, but it all goes back to the way that black men especially are portrayed in society. We are portrayed, or you are portrayed, as a threat. Everything Absolutely. That you do is threatening.
Man, that should sound threatening right there.
Everything that you do is threatening. So, yeah.
Driving while black, driving
while
and
living while black.
Everybody knows this. Black people have a certain set of rules when we in the car. Mm-hmm. When you at the stoplight and the police pull up beside you,
don't look.
You look straight. If they're behind you, you look straight.
Right.
If you have other people in the car, you notify them. Police behind us, y'all.
Look straight.
You try to get out the way. If they're behind you, if they switch lanes with you, you fucked.
Yes.
But there's so many rules. We need a black driver's ed book.
Manual.
Because
correct.
Fuck, man.
Because we're right.
But this has been another episode of Black Law and Legal Lies.
Yeah, y'all.
Don't forget, keep up with us on Twitter, IG, and reviews. I ain't even been checking the reviews. We might have some more. We might not.
Man, look, it's been the pandemic, man.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, I ran the ball in the end zone solo, no team. I was just like, boom, out there. My name is Dan. Keep up with me on Twitter and on IG at I Am Dan on Drugs. The show, all platforms at Black Law Podcast.
And I'm just Dan, and you can follow me on Twitter at I Tell Legal Lies. I do check my DM. Y'all can follow me. You can ask me questions, man. Believe me, y'all have seen. I've had this back and forth dialogue when Dan says something off stupid track.
Nah, she was just excited that people were drinking their own piss.
Nah,
peace
whatever.
Out.